Hi, I'm Brian Buchalter, NCSM's Director of Professional Learning, and welcome to Learning with Leaders. We're all math people. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, NCSM President Katie Arrington, as we talk with bold leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guest about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights about instructional decisions that make mathematics welcoming and engaging to a broad audience. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person sees themselves as a capable and powerful mathematical
thinker. Hello, listeners. I'm Katie Arrington. Welcome to the NCSM podcast, Learning with Leaders. Continuing our series, We're All Math People. Today's episode features the current president of the Mathematical Association of America, or MAA. Let's take a moment to introduce Dr. Hortensia Soto. Hortensia Soto is a professor at the Department of Mathematics at Colorado State University. Her publications have centered on assessment, mathematical preparation of K-16 teachers, outreach efforts for high school girls, and the teaching and learning of undergraduate mathematics, where she adopts an embodied cognition perspective. For the past decade, she has devoted her career to creating environments where students physically engage with abstract mathematics and researching how these environments impact student learning. In particular, she's focused on the teaching and learning of complex variables and is now exploring the role of embodied activities in other courses such as abstract algebra and linear algebra. Hortensia is a working member of the MAA. She has served as the associate treasurer, the associate secretary, as an editor of the MAA Instructional Practices Guide, and is currently serving as MAA president. She is a proud recipient of the MAA Deborah and Franklin Tepper Haimo Award for Distinguished College or University Teaching of Mathematics. In her spare time, she enjoys hiking, snowshoeing, practicing yoga, meditating, and spending time with her son, Miguel. Welcome, Dr. Hortensia Soto.
Thank you. And I hope that you'll just call me Tensia.
Of course. Of course.
Yes. Well, welcome, Tensia. Shout out to Miguel. We are so excited that you are joining us today. So thank you again for being here with us. Now, I know Katie just introduced you, but if you will, share a little bit with our listeners about your journey in education that has led you to your current work.
Yeah, I really appreciate this question. And I hope that you won't mind that this hasn't been a linear journey. The whole thing has been very circular. So I'm going to start off with something and then I'm going to come right back to it, just like we do in a circle. So I'm actually the second child of 9 children in my family. And at a very early age, I learned to read and pay attention to body language. It was a way to anticipate the needs of my younger siblings because we had to make sure things weren't getting out of hand and stuff. And it was also a way to kind of get the pulse of the atmosphere of what was going with all of us, including my parents. And another thing that's kind of important, it's a thing that I will come back to, is that my mom used to have this saying, and she would always say, usen sus cinco sentidos. And she would use that phrase when we were misbehaving or when she thought that we weren't reasoning correctly. And it literally translates to use your 5 senses. And I will say that growing up, I never really connected the translation. I just knew that I needed to change my course of thinking. But I never translated it to use your 5 senses. These were like 2 different things going on in my world. So in any case, let's fast forward a little bit. When I student taught back in 1988, I frequently used the line, you have a look with students. And I still use this line quite a bit. And this was a way to let them know that I could see or sense that they were thinking something. And it was a way for me to easily invite them in to share their thoughts or questions. And like I said, I still use this line. My students know me for using that line. And then in 2012, at that time, I was starting to investigate the teaching and learning of complex analysis, and I had interviewed several mathematicians about how they reasoned about complex analysis concepts geometrically. And I wasn't really sure how to analyze all these data. And I knew that there was one person who had published a paper in this field at San Diego State, and his name is Ricardo Nemirovsky. And so I took a sabbatical to go work with him, and he is the one who introduced me to embodied cognition. And embodied cognition is a philosophy that we learn through our bodies, and that our brains and our bodies are really not detached, but that they're interwoven and work together simultaneously. And our brain feeds our body, and our body feeds our mind. And a lot of this, I also practice yoga. And so, like, as he's explaining this to me, I thought, oh gosh, it's just like what we have to think about in yoga. So like all of it just really resonated with me. And it was at that moment that I thought about my mom's usin sus cinco sentidos. I got it right there and then. I'm like, that's what it means to reason, that we're using our five senses as we're thinking, as we're reasoning, as we're exploring. And I fell in love. I just fell in love because it just resonated with me. And it wasn't like something totally new. I thought, I've been doing this all my life. I just didn't know that there were words to it. And so it was so nice to put words to it. And ever since then, I have really kind of reshifted. I still say I've reshifted my teaching. Let me finish that sentence. In the fact that I no longer like haphazard and like, oh, you have a look, and I accidentally see that my students have a look. I'm very intentional about seeking and paying attention to not just facial expressions, but body language and things that a hand might do, or a nod, or the direction of an eye gaze, or an expression of, oh my gosh, I get this. And so I'm very intentional about seeking those expressions. I'm very intentional about conveying my own gestures to my students. And so, for example, you know, a lot of times when we're talking, for example, the slope of the direction of a line, it's like, oh, it's going in the positive direction. And we will do it instinctively without thinking. But I'm very conscientious of making sure that I have the same perspective that my students do, so they're not seeing a reflection of me, but really seeing what they would see if they're thinking about a line with a positive reflection. So I'm very, very intentional about my actions and paying attention to their actions. And because I feel like I've gotten pretty good at this, I now do what I call it creating mathematical playgrounds. And so I create environments where my students engage in some activity where I have designed it for them to convey ideas in their own language, not using mathematical language, but their own language. And then my job is to mathematize that language, but they have an experience grounded with the mathematics. And I would love to share an example, if that's okay with all of you.
I would love that. We would love that.
Yes.
I have several, but this is probably this is a recent one. And so it's related to linear algebra. And so I like to share it because it's something that one can do at a high school level, middle school level, and so forth. But on the first day of class, I bring the three primary colors of paint. And so at each table, the students get together in groups. I have three bowls that have the primary colors in there. I have paint brushes, I have paper. And their task is to create different colors using the primary colors. And sometimes I'll say, you can only use these two. What colors can you get? If you use all three, what colors can you get? And then what new colors can you make with the colors that you get? And so, you know, they have fun with all of this. And then I have very targeted questions of, you know, what happened when we only used two colors? And they would say things like, well, we couldn't get all the colors. And what happened when we had the three primary colors? Well, we could get all the colors we wanted. And of course, I talk about the limitations because I say, well, could we get the color white? Oh, no, I guess we can't get that color. And then I would say, what could you tell me about these three primary colors? Well, they're the ones that will generate all of the colors. And what happens if you use equal amounts? And what happens if you change the amounts of the different types of colors? And so there's questions like this. And so then I change their language to linear algebra language. So on day one, they learn about a basis. They learn about linear independence. They learn about linear dependence. They learn about linear combinations. And they learn about span. And so it makes it very easy for me for then when I write down, and then I do go to the board and write down the formal definitions. But this is, it all makes sense to them because they've already experienced it. Mm-hmm. And it resonates with them, and they don't forget these things. So that's the sort of work that I do. And I just tell you, I love it. I love it.
I love it too. I love to hear you talk about it. I love to hear you say the brain feeds the body and the body feeds the mind, right? Like getting students engaged and really thinking about what's happening. So exciting. And they can feel it, right? Like I bet it feels different to them.
They feel it and they get excited about it. I mean, I remember one time a student just threw his pencil across the room and he's like, this is just witchcraft. This is just witchcraft. they just get so excited about it. And it's so fun to be part of that and watch it.
And connecting to what they know and what they can do and what they can understand. I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
Tinsy, I was going to ask you a question about what it meant to have embodied cognition, but you did such a great job of explaining it. I'm going to ask you a few things about how you got involved in MAA. So you held several positions with the MAA now. How did you initially learn about the organization? What got you persuaded to join and then get more involved?
Yeah, so when I was finishing up my first master's in math ed, I sat down to talk to my advisor, and he's trying to convince me to go on and get my PhD. And I said, no, I need a break for a bit. I said, I promise I'll do it. I said, but I just really need a break first. And he said, oh, like he reached over, grabbed that MAA focused newsletter. And he said, well, you need to join this association, because they're the ones who have ads for the type of job that you could apply for. And he gave me his newsletter and he said, sign up. So I went home, wrote a check, sent it in the next day, and I became an MAA member. And I flipped through his latest newsletter that he had, and there actually was a job. There were several job ads in there. And there was one in there that I would qualify for. So I quickly applied for it also. The funny thing is I asked him, of course, for a letter of recommendation. He said, yeah, just send me the list of places you're going to apply to. And I said, well, this is the only place I'm applying to. And he just looked at me like, well, really, you should apply to others. And I said, well, you said this is where I was going to find my job. And it's the only one I'm qualified for. I got that job.
I was just going to ask, did you get it?
Yeah, I did. But anyway, I had an advisor. If he had said jump off a cliff, I would have. I just trusted him completely. And it's been a really good organization. And then after I did complete my PhD, MAA has a project for freshly minted PhDs, Project Next, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. And so I was accepted as a fellow for Project Next in 1996, and I just loved it. And like the organizers, Christine Stevens and Jim Leitzel, who were the founders of that project, like immediately invited me to like then facilitate and organize a session for our next meeting. And I was just dumbfounded that they thought I could do that because I just thought there were so many better people in my cohort. And it was just that invitation and the continued invitation, I think, is what's really special about the MAA.
That's awesome. I connect with that. We actually asked our board members last year, I think it was last year at NCSM, how they got to be part of NCSM and how they got to be on the board. And I think without exception, every one of them said personal invitation. Someone told me, you belong here. You should be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that the math community is feeling more and more inclusive. And
yes,
I love to hear that connection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love it. Yes. Thank you for holding the door open. All right. So listen, you've got us hooked now. MAA, our mouths are watering. As I'm researching, doing a little research, I came across the MAA website, and one of the things that the organization boasts is that it is the world's largest community of mathematicians, students, and enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. That's huge. So tell us a little bit more about how all of this comes together under the MAA umbrella in terms of the mission or the vision and the core values of MAA.
Yeah, I really like how you started the question talking about mathematicians, students, and enthusiasts, because you started talking about people. And yes, we are a math organization, but we're so much more than that. We are about the relationship that people have with mathematics. So it's not just a people organization, it's not just a math organization, but it's these people who, we people who just, we care about math and we care about the future of mathematics and how it impacts the world. And so the mission of the MAA is to advance the understanding of mathematics and its impact on our world. Because I think so many times we think mathematics is this abstract thing that doesn't have anything to do with our lives. And of course we see via data science, math modeling, statistics, all of these various careers where math plays a very prominent role. And for our vision, we envision a society that values the power and the beauty of mathematics and fully realizes its potential to promote human flourishing. And again, right there, the emphasis is on the people. And our association carries out its mission and vision through four pillars, which serve as our core values. And the core values are really interwoven. It's so difficult to talk about one without somehow bringing in the other ones. But in any case, the four core values, of course, are teaching and learning of mathematics, communication. And by communication, we're really thinking about our publications. And so it's not just about communicating with one another, which it is part of it, but the publication can, or I'm sorry, our communication is a verbal and a written through the publications. And then, of course, our community and inclusivity. That's very, very important to our organization. And so those are the four core values.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Well, so you mentioned Project Next as one of the things that you're proud of that MAA does, but MAA generates tons of supports and resources for the math community for lots of different folks within the math community. Do you want to share with our listeners a little bit more about what you guys offer in terms of research, professional development, all kinds of other benefits that math education leaders and students can benefit from?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think is super important to convey about the MAA is that I always say we serve people so that they can serve. And so it's like a circular thing. And so we help people so that they can move forward and do things for others. So of course, Project Next is one of these things because it helps new scholars who have never really had to think deeply about their teaching to now think about their teaching so that they can better serve their students. And we also, we recognize that, you know, we only have about 100 new fellows each year because that's all we can serve. But we also have other resources. We have Open Math, which is an online professional development for anyone who wants to learn about better teaching practices. I mentioned all of our publications, which are not only a place to learn from, but for our members, well, not just our members, anyone can publish in them. So any scholar can publish in these. And we just actually launched our latest journal. It's called Scatterplot. It's focused on data science. And our editor wants me, or wants us all, to make sure that we don't say we have articles in there. We have content in there. There's a huge difference between articles and content. And the distinction is that the content is static, but I'm sorry, the articles are static, but the content is interactive. So it's an online journal where you can click, you can go and explore other resources and so forth. And so those are some of the things. We also have our special interest groups. So for smaller communities who have special interest in, for example, sports and math, sports and art, the philosophy of mathematics, research in undergraduate mathematics, the preparation of teachers. So if we have members who have niches in those areas, then they have their little, they can have their special sessions at our meeting at MathFest. And of course, that's another resource for members and non-members to come and learn and share from one another. We also have several grants that one can apply to and to offer community engagement, whether it's to elementary students, middle school students, high school students, something at the institution, something for parents, something for teachers. And so that's what I mean about we're an organization where we serve so others can serve. And then I also, I don't want to forget to mention that the MAA is also the proud sponsor of the American Mathematics Competition. And this past year, our team got first place at the International Math Olympiad team. And we had a young woman on the team. And this is the first time we've had a woman on the team since 2007. So that's really exciting.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we offer things for everybody. It doesn't matter what stage in your career you're at. There's something for you.
That's awesome. Well, Brian is not in his normal setting today, so I have my maracas, and I'm just taking maracas to get to the
court. Please shake them on that for me. Yeah.
we just love to hear about how much is available for so many people in the world of math. It's inspiring to see how much thought and effort is put into making sure tons of different people with different perspectives, and as you said, at different kind of phases in their careers or in life, being welcomed and invited to participate. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And listen, I just got to take a moment and just like send a little love letter to you and all of the members of MAA. We're just so appreciative of the work that you're doing to make sure that everyone's there.
Yeah.
Period, you know?
We really do work at that, and that's really important for us. I always say that we're not an association, we're a community. And then I also add to that, but we're actually really more than a community. We're like the family that we choose to have as family members. Ooh. And so, you know, when new people join, I always say welcome to the family, because that really is what the MAA is, I think, for me in my mind.
Well, and I love even just, you know, the big meeting that you host every year is called Math Fest. It's not a meeting. It's not a conference. It's a festival. Like,
it's oh my gosh.
It's joy and fun. And it's just so inviting. I got to attend for my first time a couple of weeks ago. And it was, I just enjoyed it so much. And just seeing how many people were there and involved.
Yeah. Yeah, we have so much fun. It's our staff does an amazing job, and huge shout out to them because we can't do this work without them. And
Absolutely.
our members do a ton of work.
Shout out to the staff and the members. Absolutely.
Love it. Well, we have reached that point. It's the bittersweet moment for me. We are at our last question with you today, but I am so excited, like sitting on the edge of my seat, ready to hear your thoughts about this. All right. So, as you know, the theme for our podcast series is We Are All Math People. Tensia, what would you say or offer to the person who would rebut, but math just isn't my thing? I am not a math person.
Well, I would say that just because math may not be our thing, we can still find joy, beauty, and unexpected quirky surprises in math that make us throw our pencil across the room and say, "This is witchcraft." Those are quirky surprises that get us excited. And so I really believe that experiencing the surprise of math is what can help us all to recognize how cool it is. And just recognizing the coolness is enough to make us a math person.
I love that. I love that. Just recognizing. I appreciate artists so much, right? I see joy in art. I see interest. I have interest in art. I'm not a very good artist. It's like translating what's in my head to the paper is not very good, but I do appreciate it and I see joy in it and I love it in so many ways. And I love that thought about mathematics, right? We can participate in different ways.
Exactly. It's like I can't sing, but I'm singing in the car, and I'm singing in the shower, and I'm dancing around singing, and it doesn't matter. I'm not a singer, but boy, do I love music.
Yes. I love it. I love that thought. Thank you so much, Tinsia, for bringing that's a very different way of thinking about it than we've heard before. So I appreciate that so much. Thank you for bringing that.
Sure.
Well, so before we leave, I want to make sure our listeners know how to find out more. Of course, there's MAA.org, but are there other ways that you would suggest people learn more about embodied cognition or more about MAA, the specific things they should check out?
Yeah, so I think if you want to learn more about the MAA, I think checking out our Focus newsletter is really one of the best ways because it highlights so many of the different things that we do for different people by different people.
Great.
And of course, about me specifically, I would say Google me, Google Scholar me, my research, ResearchGate me for my research. There's also links to interviews in Meet a Mathematician, Texas Math Mundo, and MAA Count Me In. I've also done several professional developments on Zoom related to embodied cognition. There's one at the American Institute of Mathematics. There's one at the University of Nebraska and Lincoln, and one can just Google those things. And of course, I always say, oh, let me add these two things. I'm also featured in a couple of books, Testimonios and Living Proof, Stories of Resilience Along the Mathematical Journey. But what I really want to say is that if you want to learn more, just reach out to me. I'm very easy to find. Just go to Colorado State Mathematics Department. You'll find my email there. And I'm happy to chat with anyone.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tinsia, for spending your time with us and telling us more about these ideas of embodied cognition and really living the math, right? And also about MAA and all of the wonderful work that's happening there.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest. I really appreciate that. And I know that the MAA appreciates it. So thank you.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune into our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM Leadership in Mathematics Education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.org. You can also follow NCSM on Twitter at mathedleaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.